Sonic Tales Season 6.
Sonic Tales.
Sonic Tales Season 6.
Our picks.
Our picks.
Sonic Tales Season 6.
Our picks. It's going to be really exciting because you've got a chance, if you missed them the first time around, to listen to some of our very best plays.
Join us as we share some of our favourite original radio plays produced right here at Eastside Radio.
Our picks.
Our picks.
Our picks.
Hey there, and thanks for joining me for another episode of Sonic Tales. I'm your host, Tegan Nichols, and I'm really excited that you've joined me tonight, as this will be our last episode of Sonic Tales for 2015. We'll be ending Season 6 with a great little monologue named Contact, which tells the story of a policewoman who, while stuck in the space between her professional and personal lives, recounts the events of the day that has changed both. Forever. Contact is written by award-winning Sydney playwright Katie Pollock and is performed by Heather Mitchell, whose voice you'll no doubt recognise from her countless appearances on the Australian screen, including features in films The Great Gatsby and Strictly Ballroom. Contact features an original score by composer Clooney Edwards, and the play was nominated for an Australian Writers Guild Augie Award for Best Original Radio Drama. Playwright Katie Pollock joined me for a Q&A in the studio to discuss her writing process and what exactly inspired her writing of Contact.
And I think that's probably a lesson for me as a writer as well. I probably shouldn't start writing until there's more than one idea behind it.
Mm.
It needs more richness to work. Because then you can draw those threads together. I mean, and I love to do it through the language. I mean, as you rightly pointed out, Contact being the title, it does what it says. It connects the dots.
We'll hear more from that interview with Katie Pollock later in the show. But first, we here at Sonic Tales proudly present to you one of our favourite plays, Contact. We hope you enjoy it.
Contact by Katie Pollock. Performed by Heather Mitchell.
Thursday, 9 p.m. Six books on the bench in the kitchen where I should be. 9 p.m. Too late to make dinner. Too early in the week to order takeaway. Takeaway is the Friday reward. There is no reward for reaching Thursday. Thursday's supposed to be the looking forward, the nearly there, not the thing itself, not the there. I've had 4 days to cover that pile of books on the bench. Your homework for the week, cover 6 books and hand them in on Friday. Call that homework, says Paul. Pah, that's public schools for you. Of course, I'm the one doing it, not him. No Ben 10, you say. Superheroes are so year two. So I've had to make a special trip to Kmart for a roll of Clear Contact, and Mia still wants fairies because kindies don't care about cool. Have to run in at lunchtime, because I've been late finishing every night with Sarge away. Senior Constable took the chance to step up a rung and push the paperwork down to me, giving me homework. And you're not supposed to do that sort of thing when you're in uniform. Go shopping in Kmart. Running around with a taser in your belt like there's a high-risk incident in homewares. Not cool. So already I'm in trouble. 3 years I've been. You know how when you take a book out of the library and discover a bubble in the cover? It's like catching your math teacher doing butt-clenching exercises at the blackboard, sort of disturbing and thrilling all at once. Of course, they're all whiteboards now. Smart boards after the barbecue fundraiser. But the books still have bubbles. And you finger that little pocket of air, play with it, and let it distract you from the day-to-dayness of reading the actual book. Touch the edge of the blister with a sharp pencil, hoping it's honed enough a point to make it pop. The urge to disrupt is absolutely uncontrollable. I know. To do it right, you have to cut the sheet to the exact size. Try and fold the corners neat. Push the air out with a credit card like throwing money at the trouble and squeeze it through. Control the random elements through good preparation and cool-headed management of the situation. But still, there are the bubbles, sure as what's for dinner, and I'm bored. Paul's watching TV in the other room. Not the news, thank God. I can hear the quivering voices soaring, dipping like birds over the ocean. So much fucking emotion being pushed out before they fold their wings around the winner and make them one of their own. I'm starving, he's yelling out. Do the books in the morning. But I can't. Tomorrow morning, I have to be at the station for an interview. They're going to ask me to explain. Ask me how. How come? When did he... What? What exactly did you see? I'll have to answer all their questions. Try and remember each moment, each sound, exactly as it happened. Was I in front, or was my partner, or were we side by side? Who saw them first? Who yelled out? Thank God Paul's not watching the news. It'll give me a chance to explain before. Truth is, I've been putting off doing the books. Oh, sure, I know how to cut the little V's out of the corners so the edges don't stick to the inside page. That part's easy. But I always take a breath. Hesitate before flipping the book over. The high risk of the other side clinging to itself in a deathlock grip, it's worse than glad wrap around a triangular salad bowl. Contact is like glad wrap times infinity. Everything's times infinity since you started year three and doing proper maths. Proper maths added an extra book to the pile. Why make life so tough? That's what Paul said. Everyone said when I told them what I was going to do. It won't be easy, especially at your age. Got to fit into a man's world, stay out of trouble. 3 years I've been hearing that. But I never said I wanted it to be easy. I just wanted to be able to stand up, show you how to do things right. It feels good to be part of this team. Good times infinity. I'm still out of breath from the Kmart dash when it comes over the radio. Break and enter at the Metro Storage Warehouse just round the corner. Two perps, maybe three, other units on the way divert to intercept, so we squeeze through the traffic. But they've jumped over into the street behind and we're on foot after them, scattered this way and that. One runs slower than the other two and we think we've got him. Someone yells out, stop, and he doesn't. Stop, and he doesn't. Stop, and he doesn't. 3 times we've told him. Who yelled out? Everyone? Me? We were working as a team, as a unit. Then he's got a knife. He turns back on himself, flings his body towards us, and I don't stop to breathe, don't hesitate, I point. The probes shoot out, make contact, one in the chest, one in the leg, maximum effect. I've done it right, just like I'm trained to. Short pulses of current disrupt the control of muscles as a means of non-lethal detainment, just like they're trained to. His body judders and arcs. Pain screws up his eyebrows. His face turns away, arm flings out as if reaching for something to cling to. In his hand, he clenches a packet of chewing gum. A shiny fold of foil where the knife should be. I shift my vision away from the sights, let my arm fall to my side, and I see now, by the soft downy hair on his cheek, he's a young man. Just a boy. I drop the taser. His heartbeat dips, and news of his death pulses through the disrupted air. And I stand there, waiting for my colleagues, my team, to fold their wings around me. I know that I will be able to tell them this tomorrow morning in the interview, but more than this, I can't say. You look so peaceful lying there. Face turned away. Arm flung out. Your chest soaring and dipping. Sleep now. Empty of trouble. You'll remember tomorrow as the day you grew older. I've decided. Thursday is the new Friday. After I kiss your soft, sleeping cheek, and you brush my lips away with your hand like a bothersome fly, I'm going to order takeaway and tell Paul to turn off the TV before the news comes on, because I've got something to explain to him. And then I'm going to go to the kitchen bench, steady my hand, and cover your books. And if, as you sit at your desk and brush your hand over the book surface, you feel bubbles and the uncontrollable urge to disrupt, know this. Not everything goes as smoothly as we would like.
Contact. Written by Katie Pollock. Performed by Heather Mitchell. Music and sound design by Clooney Edwards. Recorded by Alex Reiter. Production coordinator, Tegan Nichols. Made possible with funds from the Rodney Seaborn Playwrights Trust and produced for East Side Radio by Jill Folson.
Sonic Tales Season 6.
Our Picks.
The only show devoted to bringing you Australian radio plays.
Playwright Katie Pollock joined me for a Q&A in the studio to discuss her writing process and what exactly inspired her writing of Contact. Thank you very much for coming in today.
My pleasure.
I think the first question I'd like to ask is, where did Contact start for you?
Yeah. So you, I'm sure, have heard of an excellent theatre company here called Subtle Nuance, and I hope your listeners have. They do really great original work in Sydney. They invited me to write something for, well, actually they didn't invite me. It was an open call out. For a show they were having, a multi-playwright show, and they wanted people to write short pieces. I can't remember if they had to be monologues or not, but it was a very specific call out. The theme was engagement, and it had to be something around the idea of connecting with the world, taking part, not sitting on the sidelines, not letting things come to you, but choosing to engage with the world. So there was that. And at the same time, or quite similar time, there was an incident that was in the news. And this is the name I had to look up a minute ago. A young man called, and I'm sorry for any Portuguese people out there if I mispronounce it, Bito Laudicio, who was a young Portuguese man who was tasered by the police in Sydney. He was he had drink, and I think he had some drugs in his system. But anyway, he was basically just a young man in the wrong place, wrong time, and he ran away from the police and they tasered him and he died. So these two things sort of happened at the same time, and I wanted to write something about that incident from the perspective of the police, because it struck me that clearly none of them meant to kill him. They obviously acted incorrectly in some ways. But when that call out from Subtle Nuance came to write something about engagement, it struck me that this was quite a good subject to deal with, the idea of choosing to engage in a situation rather than standing back. And that's kind of how Contact came about. Subtle Nuance never actually did the play because they chose it for the work, but then I think there was some illness or something happened and the event never went ahead. So then it sort of occurred to me that it might be nice to look at it as a piece for radio, because it is just one voice talking, which you can do on stage, but it's really nice on radio when you get inside someone's head with that voice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm.
Was there a particular reason why you wanted to tell the story from the perspective of the policewoman?
I think I'd been reading a bunch of stuff. I mean, you know, sometimes ideas come from about 50 different places and just coalesce all at the same time. So I had, not that long before, I think I'd read a long article by or about one of the leading police women. She'd been serving for a very long time, and how difficult it was for women to be on the police force and not just sort of juggle the career thing that so many of us have as professional women, but to juggle the expectations that you're not up to the same tasks as men might be, which obviously is changing. But it just struck me that it would be a very, very difficult job to do if you, because the woman in the play has her own child at home. So she has to make a decision whether to engage with this young man in a way that turns out badly. And then, you know, she has to go home to her own son. And you, as a mother, you're a very divided person all the time. There's always part of you that stays as a mother. And then, of course, when you're doing your job, there's a part of you that's not a mother at all. You're the person doing the job. So I think there's that idea of the schism within the personality, how you bridge that divide and how you go back to work the next day and say goodbye to your family and go back into that environment. It must be incredibly hard. I mean, I admire the police incredibly for what they do, and all of those people, you know, the fireys, the police, all those people. And we don't often look at them as humans. We just think of them as their job, and when things go wrong, we go, bloody cops, you know.
Yeah, we see the service.
Yeah. And I think it's much more interesting to look at the emotional core of the person, because we're all so many different things all at the same time, you know.
Yeah. And what about the title?
Well, so Contact comes from, so this is another thing that was happening at the same time, because I am a mum. I was helping out in the school library and putting Contact on the school library books. And it's, it's a real technique there. And I was getting pretty good at it. So, and it's quite hypnotic doing that sort of thing. Where you just get into a rhythm, and it's great when you want to think something through. Just, you know, put Contact on 100 library books.
And come up with a play.
So that probably all happened at the same time as I was doing it. And obviously Contact, the engagement, and the contact with the
with the boy and all that. So it worked quite well.
Yeah, it does. Wrapped up very nicely.
Literally, yeah. Like what is it? Like glad wrap around a triangular salad bowl. It's not, or better.
Generally, would you say when you start a play, it's a similar kind of process where it's ideas coming from all sorts of parts of your life?
Yeah, it depends on what it is. So if it's from an external source, like more of a straight commission, no, definitely not. Mm. This one was a real pleasure to write. I've got to be really honest because it somehow all of these things coalesced and it almost just popped out really in a day or so. And then I went back and tweaked a line and that was about it, which is unusual to say the least. So if it's something, so at the moment I'm working on a couple of different pieces. One is the Hansard monologues, which version two, which I did 3 years ago with my co-writer Paul Daly, and this is a verbatim piece based on Hansard, and we cover the period of time across the Abbott and Turnbull government. So of course that process is very, very different. There we look at much more conceptual ideas and, you know, how to tell that story. The other one I'm working on is with Bakehouse Theatre Company, again, inspired by them rather than from within me, which is a co-written by myself and an Indian writer. So her half is in Hindi and my half is in English. And it's about all inspired by the work Bakehouse has been doing in Mumbai in the red light district there with the daughters of women trafficked into prostitution. So again, there are those sort of external things where I'm trying to find my way into those. Mm. Yeah, with other pieces that more that come directly from my explorations in the world, it usually works best when there's more than one idea. If there's just one idea, it takes forever. I've got a play that I'm now on draft 17. You know, it's going nowhere fast.
17.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's a full-length play, so that's 17 full-length drafts. So it's really nice to do a 10-minute monologue that comes out in one go. And I think that's, you know, that's probably a lesson for me as a writer as well. I probably shouldn't start writing until there's more than one idea behind it.
Mm.
It needs more richness to work because then you can draw those threads together. I mean, and I love to do it through the language. I mean, as you rightly pointed out, Contact being the title, it to me, it does what it says. It connects the dots, that particular word. And often I start with a title, by the way. For me, if I don't have the title really right, the whole thing doesn't really flow.
It's interesting. So that's like your goalposts almost.
Pretty much, yeah. Once the title's right, then I know where I'm going. I mean, other people work completely the opposite way around. You know, I know of people who can't think of a title, you know, before opening night, and I'm going, what? How is that even possible? But yeah, so I think that's it. If there's, you know, if the title somehow encompasses more than one idea, then there's, yeah, you've got something going there for sure.
It's like a collaboration of all these ideas.
Yeah, and it's usually something external to me, like, for example, the tasered young man, something in the news or out there on the street, along with something that I'm kind of grappling with personally.
Hmm.
So with the idea for Contact, yeah, there's that external thing and then me as a person with a family and being outside in the world and inside the family. I think that, you know, when you can make that connection, then you've got something going.
What do you think your role is really? Because you really have a lot of power as a playwright to talk about some things and not talk about other things, for example.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways you're just an editor of your own ideas. I mean, there is a theory that the ideas are all already there out in the world and it's just your job to sort of draw them together and knit them into the correct shape and size and colour. I wish it came that easily. I mean, sometimes they're there, but not often. I'm not sure. I mean, I don't think my role is to tell anybody anything that I think they should know that they don't know. It's not that sort of didactic thing at all. I think it's more to explore the motivations, I suppose, behind why people do the things they do
and maybe to sort of crack the egg open a little bit. Of course, in theatre, you've got all of the other elements of, you know, of course, actors, directors, producers, other creatives, designers who, you know, they're all giving their 50%. So you end up with like, you know, I don't know, 950% or whatever it is. Arts, not maths. Yeah. although I understand you can do both, I'm told. In some ways, I feel like my job is to provide a blueprint for other people to do good things with. Mm. So if my work is clean enough and precise enough in some ways, then that's open. You know, if it's all over the shop, then people are just sort of struggling to catch up to make it make sense for their part of the job, the actors or the designers or whatever.
Thanks for joining me for tonight's episode of Sonic Tales, the last episode for 2015, where we share with you original radio plays produced right here at Eastside Radio. Sonic Tales will be taking a break over the summer, but we will return in 2016 with a brand new catalogue of original radio plays just for you. We hope you enjoy listening to Contact, our feature play of this evening. We hope you enjoyed listening to all of the plays that we've shared with you over the course of our program this year. Remember, if you missed out on any of Sonic Tales tonight, or any other night, you can listen to our whole back catalogue online. Simply visit our website, eastsidefm.org/Sonic Tales, or subscribe to the Sonic Tales podcast on iTunes. I'd like to thank our guest, Katie Pollock, for coming on the show tonight and for sharing her work with our project. And special thanks also go to actor Heather Mitchell, composer Clooney Edwards, and to our producer, Jill Folsom. I've been your host, Tegan Nichols, and it's been a pleasure to have you along for the ride of Sonic Tales. We at Sonic Tales would like to wish our listeners a relaxing and fun-filled holiday break, and we look forward to seeing you again in 2016. Until then, take care and good night.